So we're in the middle of a gospel and topical series. So for a lot of us, we probably don't have a disability ourselves or have family members with disabilities. We might not have ever wondered what the Bible says about this. You might not have even noticed that all throughout the Bible there are people with disabilities. The most obvious ones are the woman bleeding for 12 years in the gospel, the man born blind from birth, the paralytic lowered through the roof. Lots of other accounts too. But the Bible doesn't just portray people with disabilities as helpless and wanting to be healed. That's not their biggest goal in life. It's a lot more nuanced, I think. People with disability were some of the most prominent characters in the Bible. So in the Old Testament, you have Moses, who has a speech disability, most people think, and he was the leader of Israel through the Exodus. You have Mephibosheth, who was crippled, and he was a contender to David's throne in David's time. And then in the New Testament, you have Paul, who has the thorn in the flesh, which some people think is also a disability. And he wrote most of the New Testament. But even with all that representation in the Bible of people with disabilities, it doesn't ever really address directly the topic of disability. There's no disability passage like there's the love passage, 1 Corinthians 13. And today's passage isn't directly about disability either. But we're looking at this passage from the point of view of disability and how it might influence our theology of disability or our understanding of how the gospel influences disability. So the task that we've got today is a difficult one, and this sermon will try and cover a lot of ground, and we're going to take a few detours, two detours actually, but hopefully at the end of it, in a roundabout way, we'll see that the gospel builds a people of God from all parts of life. So the first detour is just to say that this topic is not very neat. In our church, we're aware of two people with disabilities, and I've checked with their families that the idea of this sermon's okay. But there might be more people in our church with disabilities that might be invisible and they might not feel comfortable sharing it. There might be people with family members with disabilities that we're not aware of, or people might have had other encounters with disabilities. And this might press on some sensitive points for them or for us. And it's okay to feel however you feel and grapple with it. And it's okay if you need to express something to me after the sermon, or if you feel like I've been insensitive or anything like that, feel free to tell me. I'm aiming to be as sensitive as possible and not to cause offence. I'll be trying to use the language of person with disability because it seems, in my limited experience, to be the least offensive. But each person has their own preferences. Detour two, I think for a lot of people there's a question of why is there disability? And the goal of this sermon isn't really to address that, but I will touch on it briefly because it's probably a question for a lot of people, very briefly and very unsatisfyingly. So the quick and unsatisfying answer is ultimately we don't know. Like, why do I drive down the M5 to come here? Because it's faster than the M4 and I get the rebate. So that makes sense and it's understandable, right? You know why I do it. But we don't get that type of answer with this question of disability in the Bible. We can have some pretty good guesses. We can say it's almost certainly connected to the fall and the fallen state of this world. That's not to say that disability is a direct result of sin, as in you sin, so you're disabled. But that just this world is now imperfect. So it's not surprising that our bodies and our minds are imperfect at times too. And we can say that we probably know God in a better and deeper way in a world that has disability than in a world that doesn't. We can see that God loves in a very deep way that's more than superficial. We can see that we really long for the world to come, the renewed world, in a world that now has disability. We can say for sure that God is the one who ordains disability. So Exodus 4 says that God makes people deaf or mute or blind. A lot of people would be scared to put disability in God's hands like that, but God himself says he makes it. So it's totally in his control. And in Romans 8, we can say that disability is ultimately used for the good of those who love and have been called by God. Okay, so that's the two detours, and now we can have a look at the passage. It's a bit old now, but we'll play Four Picks, One Word. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah.
I'm going to show you portrayals of people with disability from popular movies or TV shows, and then you give me a word to describe it. We might not say it out loud, unless you really want to, but have a think in your head. All right, I'll show you the first one. What is a word to describe this portrayal of disability in pop culture? I'll give you a second. What have we got? What's the word? You can shout out if you want. Fun? Oh, fun, yeah, okay. I had the joke. So their disability itself is the source of humour, and it kind of reduces a person to a joke, right? Their disability is what we laugh at and what makes us laugh. And that's its kind of only purpose. We'll go to the next one. Any words, yeah? Sad, yeah. I had the bat laugh. You know, it's a bit of an Australian word. Shock, yeah, shock. These are stories of people who overcome their disabilities to live what's considered a normal life. So in some ways it presents the ideal as normalcy. And if the person with disability can succeed, if they could only be normal or live like they had no disability. So really downplays their disability as a thing that no one wants. Last one. The bottom is Two-Face. It's like one of my favourite movies, Batman. I had the monster or the villain. This is probably the most directly offensive portrayal of people with disabilities in culture. Now, these are obviously all from movies and shows, so we've got to give them some leeway. They're like presenting entertainment. But in one way or another, this is using disability as a representation of a person's ugliness or monstrosity. So the person's disability is an outward mark of their inner monstrosity. So these are probably three of the most common ways that disability is portrayed in pop culture. The joke, the butler, the monster. Of course, there's much better portrayals of disability out there, but I think these are very common and very influential without us even knowing it. And so we need to ask, how does the Bible portray disability and people with disabilities? As a Christian, you would hope that the Bible portrays people with a lot more sensitivity and depth and nuance and acceptance. But you get to a passage like the one Aaron read out to us today in Leviticus, and on the surface it basically says, if you have a disability, you're not acceptable to God. And you can understand why people would then accuse the Bible of being archaic, and they say, we need to get rid of it, we need to move on. So we claim to have this good God who's in control of all things, who loves us despite our imperfections and works everything for our good, as mentioned earlier. But at the same time, we have Leviticus 21. And he seems to view people with disability as unworthy or unacceptable or even monstrous, right? The most offensive option you can choose is the one that Leviticus seems to portray. Verses 16 to 21, God basically gives a list of people that he deems unworthy of himself. The blind, the lame, the crippled. Pretty much stuff all out of our control, but unworthy. The hunchback. If we live long enough, we'll all probably have hunchbacks. Damaged testicles. You wouldn't want to be the guy to check for them, but also unworthy. Verse 22 is a small concession that says, oh, you can eat the food, but you can't offer it. So you get a bit of a concession. But then verse 23, in case you missed all the offensive stuff, it just reconfirms. They can't go near to the altar because of their defect. And verse 24, it's not just told to the priests, which this is relevant to, but it's told to all of Israel. So everyone knows, if you have a disability, you're not worthy of going near God. You can understand that God would only want offerings without defect, and we should give the best to God, that sort of thing. But he's talking about people here. Like rejecting a lamb because it's got a crippled foot is different than rejecting a person because they have a crippled foot. So how do we reconcile this picture that we get in Leviticus with the loving God that we believe that we have? I think to do that, you need to understand Leviticus as a whole. If you've read Leviticus, and I know the people doing the Bible in 2 years group, congratulations to them, they've read it by now. You're probably in the minority if you've read Leviticus. If you've read Leviticus and you actually love reading Leviticus, you're in the minority of a minority. But actually, I think you've got it right. Leviticus is a really exciting book and hope-filled once you see it from a bird's eye view, from a big picture. At the beginning of Leviticus, the newly rescued Israelites, who were rescued solely so that they could go out and worship God, have just built and set up the tabernacle. So that's the place where God's going to come down and meet them. And God comes down in a cloud of glory and rests in the temple. But the tension here is that because God's in the temple, not a single person can actually meet him. So the purpose is that he's there to be met, but they can't meet him because he is there, because they're all unclean. So the question is, how does a unclean people come close to a holy God? The book of Leviticus is the answer. And the laws in it describe a path of moving you closer and closer to the presence of God. So this is how the Israelite camp was set up while they were wandering in the wilderness. Most of the people live on the outer perimeter, so those are all the tribes of Judah around the outside. One step in are the priests and Levites, and then at the very centre is the tabernacle where God dwells. And the laws function to physically and metaphorically move you closer and further from God. So if you, for example, had a skin disease or bodily discharge, like menstruation, you couldn't come close to the tabernacle because you're unclean. Not your fault, not in your control, but you're unclean. Similar to disabilities, not your fault, not in your control, but you can't do that. Sometimes for these people, they even had to live alone outside of the camp because they were considered so unclean. But the highest goal of the Israelite was to move towards the tabernacle. They wanted to go the other way. So if there was nothing that made you unclean, you could move closer to God. So if you're from the tribe of Levi, you get to live in the inner room. If you're a priest, you get to go into the tabernacle, do the rituals. If you're a high priest, on one day a year, after a lot of preparation and with a lot of fear, you could enter the Holy of Holies and be in the presence of God. So this movement in towards the tabernacle as you become holy and out from the tabernacle as you become unclean was the natural movement of life. So this happened all the time. You would be clean for a minute and then you would get a cut and it would leak bodily fluids and so you're unclean. You move back out and you move in and out, in and out. So this constant moving from unclean to clean to holy and back was a frustrating reminder that it was nearly impossible to come into the presence of God. And most of these frustrations were beyond your control. Skin diseases, menstruation. So this passage is a look at one particular step along that path. If you're a priest, you can come in to the temple and perform a ritual. But if you're a priest with a disability, you can't offer the food as sacrifice. So there was a frustration for the priest with a disability that the priest without a disability didn't have. They can't come closer. It's not their fault, but they have no power to. So the act of coming before God is no small task. And the limitation of the priest was frustrating because of that. So this law in some ways, I think, is good to be viewed as an enacted parable. Each time it would come time to offer food to God for these priests, the ones with disability had to step back and say, I can't do this, I need help. And the other priests would do it on their behalf. But they were all sharing the benefit. So if you remember in verse 22, it says that they may eat of the holy food. It's actually no small thing. In other passages, it tells us that eating of this holy food actually makes them holy. It makes them acceptable to God. So they don't actually miss out on anything. They receive the fullness of the blessing of the ceremony by stepping back from it and saying, I need someone else's help. But there was also a frustration to the priests without disabilities too. So when it came to the most important ceremony of the Jewish life, the Day of Atonement, which was the ceremony that symbolically removed all the sins from the people of Israel, the priests, even the ones without disability, couldn't participate in that. It's not their fault, they had no power to. They had to step back and say, I can't do this, I need help. And the high priest would do it on their behalf. And then the whole nation would share in the benefit of having their sins forgiven. So this law is an enacted parable which constantly reminds Israel and the priests specifically of their limits. For any number of reasons, most of which were beyond their control, they were excluded from God. But God's made a path towards him. It's near impossible to walk it. But there is one person that can. And so you need to rely on him. That's what this enacted parable says. And when we get to the new covenant, which is the time that we live in, we begin to understand that the priest with disabilities and all these other regulations that prevent people from entering the most holy place is a picture of our own hard-heartedness, our own stubbornness, our unrepentance, our selfishness, our sin. All of these things make us unable to come into the presence of God, and we need the help of other priests to move forward, to do what we can't do. And in the end, we need the perfect high priest who can walk all the way into the Holy of Holies, perform that one ceremony which will forgive our sins, so that we can all benefit from it. So this picture of what happens between one priest and another priest is like a picture of what happens between one person of God and another person of God, and ultimately a picture between what happens between us and Jesus. The priest with disability doesn't just represent people with disability, but it represents all of us in different ways. We're all limited beings. Our strength runs out, some quicker than others, but it always runs out. And so we turn to others in the community to help us. The priest with disability became a priest knowing that he had a limit in the ceremonial laws, because verse 24 tells us all of Israel was told this. Everyone knew what these priests would have to stop at. So when he reached the limit of his ability, he continued to participate in the ceremony by stepping back and saying, I need your help. I need you to do this on my behalf. And that's the voice that I think we're told to listen to today. Christians in Australia, probably most of the Western world, can tend to be very independent. Christianity here makes our relationship with God personal. It's mine, makes my faith personal, makes my actions personal. And they are, to some extent, but they're also communal. Your faith doesn't exist between you and God alone, because God has chosen a whole people from all walks of life to be his people, not just you. So we need to listen to that voice that says, I can't do this. I've reached my limit and I need you. And we need to be ready to help as fellow priests and fellow people of God. The voice could be saying, I need help to get around. Could be saying, I need help with my back pain. I need help with money. I need help with loneliness. Whatever it is, they need help. And our response isn't too different than just to be a friend. A disability theologian who writes a lot on this, his name's Hans Reinders. He puts it this way. He says, disabled people are rarely chosen as friends, except by other disabled people. But it's the one crucial good that disabled people long for. So it's kind of heartbreaking. And from one perspective, that's what the passage is about today. One priest being a friend to another priest. Imagine if that priest with a disability said, I can't make this food offering, but there was no one around to hear it. He would be limited and he would have no one to help. And that would be tragic. But sadly close to what many people with disability live with day to day. But here in God's community, what should happen is one priest says, I need help. And the other one says, I will help. The power of disability is that it forces someone to say, I need help sooner. But it's a limit that we all reach at one point or another. So what's the picture of people with disability in the Bible? I don't think it's as a joke or as a battler or as a monster, but it's much more complicated. At least in this passage, it's a picture of limits and of dependence and of sharing blessing and of friendship. And it's a picture of all of us. And it's a call for all of us to help. It's a call for all of us to respond.